Somewhere in the darkness, there's a man they call the Skipper, fast asleep, dreaming of gold. Weeks before the sun does, even though he'd rather stay in bed, curses the cold in Minnesota. Why's it always so damn cold? He's got a job.
You're listening to Stonecast, Curling in the Twin Cities with Jordan Wickland and Christopher Lisney. So I'm here with Scott Clausen, manager of the St. Paul Curling Club. We're doing Stonecast during juniors curling because both of us have kids here. So we're watching them try not to fall on the ice. So welcome.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here today.
Normally we would have Jordan, but Jordan can't make it. He had a baby.
He's working on increasing the numbers for the junior program, obviously.
That's right. Stella May, I think, is the name of the child.
Ooh, wonderful.
Yeah. So I saw a picture. He and Rachel had a beautiful little baby girl.
Time, weight, length?
The only thing I know is the length. It was 24 and a half inches. No, that's not true. But that's funny that you asked that, because I always think that's funny that people ask about the length. You know, like that's an important measurement. So whenever anybody asks, tells me like, oh, it was born at 3 o'clock and it was, you know, 47 pounds and whatever, I'm always like, well, what's the length?
They have slot limits in Minnesota here.
Before we get started, I wanted to just go through a couple mailbag activities. We haven't done one of these for a month. We got a complaint email that came in from an Erin Lisney, which apparently is my wife.
Oh,
and
boy.
She mentioned that a couple things. She said that she listened to the episode with Chris Houghton, and we talked about curling, rugby. And apparently I failed to mention that Erin, my wife, played rugby in college, and she was a hooker, the same position that Chris was. And she thought I might have been ashamed by the fact that she used to be a hooker. So I had to have to apologize for that. And then...
So that position plays in the middle of the scrum then, right?
I guess so, yeah.
Okay.
And I guess it tries to hook the ball out.
Right, as they...
Although it's probably not called a ball in rugby.
Hopefully I'll remember all of my family members and everything we've done together.
I'm just happy that she listens, so that's cool. I just wanted to mention, we had a whole bunch of activity during the Cash Spiel streaming, and I'm just going to like list, name a bunch of people that interacted with us, kind of new interactions. I'm not going to go back and talk to the, like, we have this one guy, the blank end, who interacts a lot. I think his name's Chris, and he's from Massachusetts, and I'm not going to name, I just did. We have this front end curler, Rebecca, from the Coyotes Curling Club. We talked about broom shooters, and she sent us a picture of their team or their club doing a broom shooter down in Arizona. I think Coyotes Curling is in Arizona.
What all entails a broom shooter?
You don't know what a broom shooter is? Oh, well, Jordan thinks that we should get broom shooters here. It's a broom, like you take a broom. I guess it's like a ski, a shot ski.
Shot ski, okay. So
what's with their broom. Yeah. Yep. So that was pretty exciting. Scott Vyer gave us a lot of information. He's a Twitter guy, Backseat Gaffer is his name. Sue Mitchell listened in while we had Dex on, and she was pretty excited to hear Dex's voice, which is kind of cool. And she also commented about my love of lemurs, and she suggested that I go down there because Duke has a lemur center.
I think that surprised a lot of people that weekend, your penchant for lemurs.
Yeah. You got to keep things fresh and entertaining. And then we had a bunch of, we had a number of teams interact with us, which was pretty fun. So thanks for all the interactions. Keep it up. It makes it fun.
Yeah, I heard some good comments and stuff, and people really enjoyed listening to the streaming and stuff, and really good positive feedback.
But yeah, it was fun to do.
Stonecast is supported by our friends at the Once Upon a Crime Mystery Bookstore, 604 West 26th Street in Minneapolis. Not only do they have a fantastic collection of mysteries, thrillers, and crime novels, they host some of the best author events in the area. Check them out on the web at www.onceuponacrimebooks.com. That's www.onceuponacrimebooks.com.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting with our club. It's like Tuesdays are a big deal in the summer.
Yep, Tuesdays we have our volunteers come in and we got our Tuesday work crew. And for whatever projects we have set aside for the summer, we come in and get them accomplished. We welcome all St. Paul members to come down and help out. We offer free beer. After they work an hour or two, everyone typically sits down and watches a Twins game and has some pizza.
Is there any truth to the rumor that more work got done this year because the Twins were so bad?
Nope. That pretty much, the output of the work crew stayed about the same, I think. And we're still doing some finishing touches because we remodeled our upstairs club room. Looks gorgeous. We're just waiting for a few items to be installed, and then we should be complete.
Yeah, we're sitting on in front of the glass on sheet six, watching juniors curl. I watched my daughter fall over on sheet seven a moment ago, so that was pretty exciting. But we're looking through this beautiful glass.
Yep, we got a new safety glass up here, and we've removed the mullions between the panes so we can have a better view.
What's a mullion?
It is the wood piece that goes between the panes, and now it's just a silicone strip, I believe.
Yeah, it looks really great. I've been, people have challenged me to try to run through the glass because it's safety glass and you're not supposed to be able to break it.
Mm-hmm. That's what the warranty says.
But I'm not willing to take that for the team. There were other improvements, too. What, like, the lights have been... I've had a lot of people comment about how great the lights are.
Yep, we installed brand-new LEDs over the summer in the arena, and we also added an extra bank of lights over sheets 7 and 8, because it used to be a little darker in that side of the...
Oh, you know what? That would make sense, because I was over there. I think I was curling on 7, and someone was like, "Wow, it's nice. Lights are nice over here."
Yep. So that's illuminated nicely. So it's a lot brighter, it seems to be, this year. And there was quite a contrast when we were doing it, because we kept some of the old fluorescence up as we were putting the LEDs in, and there's a dramatic change.
I was thinking you should have got those smart bulbs that you can change the colors on. And then we could have like midnight curling, and you could have like disco lights going on, or when it gets like tight, like when you're like a tight end or something, you could have it like it all go red, like we're in the red zone.
Intensity or mood to this situation, I guess.
Yeah.
Would be it. So you could, it's a tight situation, flash red. And
if you happen to know.
Danger warning or beware. There are a few lefties in our club and all that. But last season, we found a Bonspiel up in Toronto, Canada, actually Oakville, Ontario, outside of Toronto, that has an all-left-hander spiel. So they have had a men's and women's division, and it was, I believe, a Thursday through Sunday tournament, and everyone had to play left-handed.
And you dominated?
We did the first two games. Cool. First two games, we were still in the first event, and then we ran into the five-time winner and lost to them in a close game, and then played some ice makers that make ice around town in our second game on Sunday morning, and was out of the spiel. But Toronto's a fun town. Got to go visit the Hockey Hall of Fame. And got to curl in a great club. It was another 8-sheet club.
How is it similar, and how is it different than our club here?
Well, actually, I thought our club was extremely busy with 20 draws a week, but talking to their general manager, found out they have 26 draws a week. Some of the main differences between them and us are they only have 2 Bonspiels a year, where we have anywhere from 15 to 17 a year. So their weekends, they're doing more leagues on the weekends and during the day and stuff where they fill in.
Do people come and like pitch Bonspiels to you?
Come in with different ideas. Like last year, we had we had the Tri-Spiel, and that was put on by Tim Gartner and Alex Carlson, and that was not your typical curling Bonspiel, but it was made up of 3 different disciplines: a ring toss inside, darts, and then the curling portion of it turned out to be a short game, where you play from the near hack to the near house.
I was taught to do a short and curling by Cam McClellan, is it? McClellan?
Yep.
Cam McClellan. And he's a real purist about that game, too. I've been doing a short game, and he's been walking by, and he'll walk out on the ice, and he'll criticize both the play and, like, we're not following the official short game rules.
Are there official short game rules?
Apparently. I don't know. It's one of those rules that are just passed down, and if you don't know them, you're just an idiot, I guess.
Well, that's why Cam's around, to help carry on the tradition and the rules of the short game. And I assume you learned it probably late one evening during a bond spiel.
Yeah, I think I learned it in the Goodwill a couple of years ago, which was the first bond spiel I ever did.
Sometimes they play with the lights on in the arena. Sometimes, since it's so late at night, they just leave the lights off, and you're only playing to the near house, so you don't need the lights on.
I was thinking it might be kind of fun to try to set up a web streaming of some short game curling. Maybe we could have like the world championships here.
That could be a interesting possibility.
Probably bring a lot of traffic into the club.
This could be a great opportunity for you to run your first bond spiel.
Yeah.
Great idea.
I don't want to do another bond spiel. So I was talking to Brad, brother Brad.
Okay.
He said that you like to cook.
Yes, we like hosting parties and stuff, and a lot of the family events we have over at our house, and me and my sister like to cook. And
here come the little rocks. You can hear that.
All their excitement coming up for snack time.
I know, this is like the best thing is the snacks. Oh, there's Ruby.
Hi.
Hey, Ruby.
Hi, Ruby. How are you doing?
Do you want to join in on the interview?
Sure.
You do?
Sure.
Excellent.
All right. Let me get you hooked up here. So Ruby has joined. Ruby is the daughter of Aaron and Chris Lisney. Not just my daughter. She's also Aaron's daughter.
Very nice. Very nice. Welcome, Ruby. It's a pleasure to see you this morning.
How is the curling out there?
Good.
I saw you fall.
Yeah.
Why did you fall?
I don't know.
All right. So do you have any questions for Scott?
Sure. Do you know what's one of the words I say a lot?
Not being around you very much and stuff, I would not have a clue.
Sure.
You like saying sure a lot.
Yeah, that's her thing. She says sure a lot. She'll say that like if it's something really exciting is happening. I'm like, oh, did you like seeing your friend who we haven't seen for 2 weeks?
Sure.
And you know, she's like, sure. Which makes me think she's a teenager.
Well, I have two teenagers that are experts at the one-word answers as well. Good and fine and okay are favorites of theirs.
When did your kids start curling?
Oh, I think they started curling about 9 years ago. 9, 10 years ago. So they've been doing it a while.
Do they start here?
They started here at St. Paul. As a parent, trying to get them involved in some activities and stuff, and asked them what they would like to do. And if they didn't select anything, we'd probably try curling. So then here we are, many years later. One thing neat about them curling is they are fourth generation Clawson curlers.
Yeah, it sounded like Brad was saying that your family kind of got out of curling for a while, which I think is pretty interesting that you had family curling, mm-hmm. kind of stopped curling, and then you reinvigorated it, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, and with our family, I think my parents got out of curling because of having three kids. You heading out, Ruby?
Oh, that was a great interview, Ruby. Thanks for joining us.
Did you enjoy it?
Sure.
Wonderful. That's what I was hoping to hear.
Yeah, it's really, it's interesting. I was talking to a guy who curls in Duluth. He was selling me some services, and he came down and he read on my company website that I like to curl. And at the very end, after he did this big sales pitch and everything, anyways, he had this nice pitch and we learned all about what he does. And at the very end, he said, oh, I heard you were a curler. And I said, oh, yeah, I curl. I said, I've been curling for a little bit. Found out he curls from Duluth. He had to get out of here at a certain time because of the, because he had a game that night. But I asked him, and he had kids, and I asked him about their junior program. And he said, oh, yeah, they curl they curl in the junior program, and but they have to pay up there. I think that they have to pay to be to do the junior program, which is I've heard. Like I like that we don't have to pay. I think that's really great. And it's, I actually told Aaron this year, I'm like, don't think about taking the curling, the junior curling, out of the rotation of things that Ruby does because it's free. But I can see that sometimes people might not take it as seriously because it's free.
Yeah, sometimes you get that when you don't have much skin in the game and all that. But our program is kind of set up way back when where juniors were sponsored by a club member or parent of a club member, and then they could come and curl for free. And then as time went on, I think the rules got less and less, or more and more lax on that rule and stuff. And I think when membership was down, I think we just wanted any curlers to come in and help and kind of promote the sport. But we get great turnout. The last 5-6 years, we've had 50 to 80 kids out there regularly and stuff, barring any school holidays.
Yeah, it's it gets really crowded. I don't know. I've never really experienced any other junior program, but it seems like ours is pretty good. And both you and I have been working with that TCCA deal. Mm-hmm. And you kind of hear from that what other clubs, newer clubs around, what their junior programs are like. And they're trying to get something like that.
Right. They're trying to find their way and get a junior program and get more numbers. And St. Paul's participating in that. And
yeah, and you're a coach.
Yes, I am a coach.
So, Ruby, are you enjoying this curling? It seems like you're doing better this year than you did last year. So you're improving. That's good. You're a great interview, Ruby.
What's your favorite part of Saturday curling? It doesn't have to be the curling. Just your favorite part of coming down to St. Paul Curling Club on Saturdays.
Going across the street to get cookies.
Ah. But you don't always go across the street to get cookies, do you? You do?
We're going to.
Oh, yeah. She really likes that little cake place across the street. She likes the macaroons or macarons.
Okay.
Or we go to this place called Cupcake.
Yeah, which is closed now, I think.
But there's one at the Mall of America.
So you don't care about the curling part?
I like doing this thing. I forgot what they're called.
Superman's?
No, the one where you go on the side and then
you work
push
on your balance.
Off. I think they're like eagle sides or something.
Okay.
So I noticed on Facebook your son Jack.
Yes.
And what's your other
Sam?
Jack and Sam, they're on a team.
Yep. Team Plaza.
With Dylan.
Dylan Barrett from St. Paul.
And I don't know who the other.
Josh Prohl.
And they're like a college team.
Not quite. They've been curling competitively together for the last few years. And Jack is a sophomore at the U, and Dylan is a freshman at St. Thomas. So it's half college and half high school.
So, and I noticed that there's a fundraising goal. You have it's not GoFundMe. It's one of those type. Well, maybe it is GoFundMe.
I believe it is GoFundMe. And
so I'll put a link out for that because all our listeners, I'm sure, are going to be just supporting. What when you do a fundraiser like that, like what are some of the expenses that a junior team has?
Well, in our case, Josh does not live in the area, so he travels a couple hours when he wants to practice with us. He's out from the Wilmer area and stuff. And then also, when you travel, you got your hotel, food, and then you got your entry fees. And now I assume there will be some supply costs and stuff with the new broom head when they're trying for nationals. We'll have to get the new compliant broom heads.
It seems like if you're going to be really like a competitive curler, you have to bond spiel all the time.
That's how the USCA is setting it up, where you got to be competitive and go play and the competitive bond spiels and gather your order of merit points.
What would be a different way to set it up?
Just go back to the old way where you had the playdown, and then winner of the national championship represents the Worlds.
So you wouldn't necessarily have to put in the work during the year if you're already at a certain level.
Correct. It's kind of like qualifying maybe for the U.S. Open, like in golf or whatever. Everyone can have a chance and they go through the qualifying. And people that do well that week get to represent.
I don't have a huge interest. Interest isn't the right word. I find it interesting, but like, is the USCA only about competitive curling, or are they about growing the sport? I think because it seems like everybody concentrates on how we pick the national champion or whatever that is.
It's kind of the lightning rod topic for everyone and stuff. Just because there's a lot of competition and a lot of dollars involved now, that they have a lot more rules and regulations and restrictions on how to qualify and how the teams are picked and who gets funded and supported and stuff. But no, the USCA also does a lot of other good programs and stuff too. They offer learn to curl clinics, helping clubs with that. They also officiating clinics to help us run some of their championships and stuff. This year, between the holidays, between Christmas and New Year's, St. Paul Curling Club will be hosting the West Junior Regional Tournament to qualify for Nationals.
Yeah, Evan mentioned that he wanted to stream that.
Okay.
But isn't it like during, it's like a week, it's during the week.
We have a week set aside between Christmas and New Year's. We have that week set aside, but the length of the event will all be determined on how many people register and sign up for the event. This year, it's a new format. Previously, they used to have state competitions leading to nationals. Now they have a regional, and they've set up an east and west region. So we'll see how many teams want to travel to Minnesota and play competitively.
Yeah, I've heard people be kind of irritated about how east and west, it kind of gets rid of the rivalries or the...
You used to have your rivalry within the state, and then if you didn't make it with the state, you'd still kind of cheer for your rep at nationals or whatever. Now it's a little different, and people can be put together from all over.
You know that USCA, that ruling about the... they've got this deal where if you're not a member club and one of their officers works at a member club or does something, they could be asked to like step down.
I read it and stuff. I'm just still trying to digest all the implications for it and stuff.
Seems kind of weird to me, but I was talking to John Solem about it. And I said, you know, and he said he thinks a lot of it in his mind is that they want to, you know, like encourage people to get memberships. That seems reasonable. He said, but, you know, if you look like a club like Chaska, which I don't know if they are members or not. I think that they're not, but they're in process of working on it or something.
They're in the process of working on it. I don't think they've declared definitely which way they're going to go.
But they have over 1,000 members. So if they have 1,000 members and then you got to pay the USCA $30 a member, that's $30,000 that's come out of their budget.
And also another interesting thing I saw on Facebook was the junior Wisconsin team declared that they're not going to try for nationals because they didn't want to travel to Pennsylvania.
Oh, because they're on the east.
Right, because they're in the east region.
Could be that they're afraid of that Penn State or that Penn curler out there, Cody.
There you go.
I never really thought about that, but that's kind of like when the Big Ten, you know, switched to East and West too. It kind of messes that up.
Yeah, the logistics and stuff. Yeah, back in the old days, when they went with states, you knew your first qualifier was within a 5-hour drive of wherever you're at, basically within the state. And now it can be held anywhere out west.
Do you have any desire to comment at all about your gluing your sister's hands to the weight bar? I don't know if you heard the story that your brother told, you might want to clarify, you know, whether or not it was really a malice, you know, act of malice or not.
She's still going on and on about those stories.
She can't get over it.
There may be some truth to it, but I was busy working out and for speed skating in our basement. Before I started curling, me and my sister were speed skaters, so doing a little dry land training. And
just thought you'd spice it up a little
just
bit.
Just thought we'd spice it up a little bit and wanted alone time. And
when you do like competitive speed skating, do you have to travel a lot? Like, is it similar to like we were talking about?
Similar to curling and stuff like that. We started out in the local novice program in Roseville, and it was before the Roseville Oval. Curled at the small natural ice track, and then we'd move over to Como. Went Lake Como when the lake froze, and that's when we did most of our skating there. And when we made national teams, then we had to start traveling and training, going to the Olympic Training Center in Colorado Springs when it first opened up for summer training. And then we would, when we made national teams, we'd wander over to Germany. And then most winters, since I'm old enough, the main artificial rink at the time was in West Allis, Wisconsin. So we would spend a lot of time between Thanksgiving and Christmas down there training and getting ready for the season.
How old would you have been in this, like, at this point of your...
I think I started speed skating when I was in fifth grade, and then made national team 15, 16 years of age. Then I had to start traveling. And
so you're fast.
I was fast.
You said that you went outside. The ice was outside.
Yes.
Like on the lake. I would think that that would be all like gnarly and bumpy and all that. And I, you know, you're going through, you know, on those long skates, I would think that you would crash a lot.
No, they had shavers. So the ice would be shaved before large events. Hi, Ruby. Ruby's down on the ice getting back into curling and after snack time.
She's got her Canada gloves on.
Ready to go.
She's a Canadian citizen, you know.
Very nice. So she won't be voting this election?
No comment. Actually, I do have her registered to vote, and she's not old enough, but I forged the paperwork.
No ID required, huh?
Speaking of forged paperwork, can you tell me about paper clubs? What is a paper club?
Paper club is probably a league or a group of people that rent ice from a facility. And name their club or group, whatever they want to.
So are they like USCA members? Independent? You know, so, like are the Bonnies?
Well, yeah, the Bonnies through here. St. Paul pays the dues for the Bonnies because they're members of the St. Paul Curling Club.
The reason I ask is because I'm working on a scheme. Not a scheme, a plan.
That's not a scheme yet.
Yeah, a plan. A number of us are planning on curling at the Club Nationals in Alaska.
Okay.
But we don't want to go through the hassle of qualifying at the state level.
Okay.
So I was talking to a lawyer friend of mine who I happen to curl with on Sundays, Kevin, and he suggested, and I thought it was brilliant, that we just start a paper club, like from a state that doesn't have ice.
There you go.
So I'm thinking about doing a paper club from Puerto Rico to qualify for nationals. And then, but I'm going to have to rent some ice from you. Maybe just one night in the whole season, maybe on a Tuesday or Wednesday afternoon.
Interesting. Similar to the Jamaican bobsled team?
That's the idea. So we're going to start a paper club from Puerto Rico. And we're going to have state championships held at St. Paul because we don't have ice in Puerto Rico, unfortunately. We're having some financial problems. Can't afford the ice maker's salary and that sort of thing. So,
okay. Do you know if there are any other representatives from Puerto Rico?
Well, I'm just making that announcement right there. But they got to be members of our team. Not of our team, of our club. So they'd have to pay dues. So if they're any dues-paying member of the Puerto Rican curling team certainly can qualify for the And if they're men, because it's going to be men club. We'd also could do a women's club national. That'd be fun, too.
Okay. Keep me posted on how that progresses.
I might need some help. I might need somebody to tell the USCA that this is a legitimate club, because I could see them might not like that. So.
Okay.
Anything more that you feel that we haven't covered that we should cover?
I don't know. You asked me about my cooking and stuff. As I said earlier, me and my sister enjoy cooking, and we got into hosting a dinner party for Oktoberfest, which kind of follows along the lines of our speed skating background and stuff, because we traveled to Germany and then we liked that food and all that, so, and the beer and everything. And then we decided to start hosting a dinner party that started 10, 11 years ago with a small group of about 15. And now we're up to, we have a sit-down dinner at our house for about anywhere between 30 and 40 people.
What do you serve?
We try and serve authentic German fare, Wiener Schnitzel, Rouladen, then we always have the normal.
What's Rouladen?
Rouladen is a kind of a beef roll-up. So what we do is you take a frankfurter, cut it in half, and then get some stuffing, and then set it on a piece of pounded beef, and put some stone ground mustard on the beef, and roll up the stuffing and the frankfurter in there, and then make a gravy and bake it. And it comes out very tasty.
You bake it at like low temperature over a long period of time, so it's like super tender?
Super tender and stuff, and then we have a mushroom gravy put on it when we make that. Then we also have the normal staples of the red cabbage and German potato salad, and everyone loves Spätzle. Yeah, it works well, and we got a great group of people that we do the pre-planning meeting / party to determine the menu and stuff.
Yeah.
And then the Friday before the event, we have sister and her boyfriend over, and then we also have another family, Joe and Jennifer Schneider, and Kelly Chirpich, who come help, and we prep all the food. So there's not that much to do the day of the event other than to
just enjoy
and heat and stuff. And
do you make the schnitzel?
Yeah.
How do you make schnitzel?
Wiener Schnitzel, you take a veal cutlet and pound it thin, and then you bread it and fry it.
You know what I was thinking, that schnitzel, what is there's like a pasta. It's not pasta, but it's a...
Spätzle.
Spätzle.
Yep, it's just a little...
Do you make Spätzle?
Yes. Yep.
How do you make Spätzle?
Mix the flour and the nutmeg and everything
so you make a
together.
Dough.
You make a dough, and then you drop it into boiling water. Like
but
noodles.
How do you have to cut it, or do you roll it?
Nope. We got this thing. One of our guests who used to work at, or I believe she still does work at a kitchen shop or culinary shop. It's a device called the Spätzle Ass.
What?
It's called the Spätzle Ass. And it must be German, Spätzle, and then not sure what the ass part means.
Press,
there we go. So then it's basically, it sets on top of the pot of boiling water, and it has holes in it, and you set the dough on top, and then you take a spatula and you just rub across the top, so then the noodles drop in the size of the hole. And drops in there.
That's brilliant.
And then and you take it off, and noodles drop to the bottom. And then when they float to the top, they're done, and you scoop them out.
Just like pierogies.
Start all over again. Getting back to the German meal and the Spätzle and stuff, I had mentioned the device that we got, and it was compliments of St. Paul Curling Club member Lori Arnold, who bought the Spätzle Ass.
Is it ASS?
I believe so. I'd have to look at it again. And I'm not sure if there's any umlauts or anything around.
That's pretty cool. Spätzle. I like Spätzle, but I've never made it before. Scott, thanks for being interviewed. It was a fun time.
It was a blast. You guys are doing a really great job here for Stonecast, and look forward to many more episodes coming up.
All right. Sounds good. Good curling.
Thank you. Okay.
There's a man they call the skipper, fast asleep, dreaming of gold.